You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Illegal immigration. Yes, we have to remember our domestic problems. We will discuss that tonight. What's happening in the cities? What's happening with the trans movement? What is happening on this two-front war? Oh my gosh, and Senator Rand Paul. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Well, this isn't going well, or it is. All right, here's the latest and greatest, because we have a bunch to get to tonight with illegal immigration and trans stuff and whatnot, but we're going to keep everyone updated on what's happening with the whole Israel, Hamas, Hezbollah. Hezbollah from the north is now getting involved in some way. Rockets, potential invasion. There's a lot of fog of war going on. So that now, just so we're clear, here's Israel. Underneath, down to the south is Hamas. Israel's amassing in the south, attacking Hamas. Now you have Hezbollah in the north. There's Hezbollah. It's an ugly bit of business. Iran's involved. The Biden administration, completely inept, trying to just hold together or patch together their Iran deal. This thing is going to be a mess of messes. Now, I said all that, not so you'll stop following it. We're going to keep you updated on the big things whenever those things come. I said all that just so you can just prepare yourself for some rough days ahead of various bombs and explosions and people dead. And let's hope more than anything, this can end. Let's hope it can end, because it's going to be terrible. And we just have the worst politicians here. You know, at a time when we need guidance, where we need wisdom, we need, you know, sober, logical thinking. And it goes way beyond just Democrats or just Joe Biden. It's way beyond that. I mean, it's friggin' Republicans, too. Lindsey Graham, gosh, I can't stand Lindsey Graham.
Well, for every Israeli or American hostage executed by Hamas, we should take down an Iranian oil refinery. The only way you're going to keep this war from escalating is to hold Iran accountable. If Hamas kills one American and Israeli hostage, we're going to blow up your oil refineries and put you out of business. It is now time to take the war to the Ayatollah's backyard.
Okay. Well, look, there's a big, big, big war going on right now. I'm worried about how ugly it's going to be. But I tell you what I'm not going to do is listen to Lindsey Graham. He hasn't been this excited since he went to Thunder from Down Under. Joining me now, my friend Dave Reboy. He is somebody who's a national security expert. He's my friend. He's someone who knows a ton about this region. He's going to not give us emotional vomit like Lindsey Graham. Just tell us what's going on. Dave, okay, Hamas, Hezbollah. Most Americans, many Americans, focus on themselves and their own problems, no judgment, but they don't really understand the difference between these two. What is the difference?
Sure. Well, one is Shia, the other is Sunni, but they are united in the fact that they're both terror proxy armies sponsored by Iran, which is Shia. So for the last many, many years, the Iranians have had no problem at all funding Sunni groups in order to, I mean, this is how the Iranians conduct their foreign policy. You know, we will go and we will trade with other nations, or we will have diplomatic relations with other countries, or maybe even send our military in case, you know, if we decide to do that. What the Iranians do in order to project power in order to sort of encircle the Middle East and take over the region is they will go to a country like Lebanon with the example of Hezbollah, and Syria with the example of Hezbollah and Assad, or Yemen with the Houthis, or Hamas in Gaza, and they will basically set up a terror army that grows and grows and grows and is violent and takes over the government there. So right now you have Iran in control of four Middle Eastern capitals, and this is how they exercise their power. I mean, just to go back to Lindsey Graham for a quick second, what he said was crazy for a number of reasons. And I think he totally discredits the cause of, you know, people like me and other sane people who walk around and say, you know, Iran is a threat, but the way to, you know, the way not to deal with this is exactly to listen to Lindsey Graham.
Dave, Hezbollah and Lebanon, I merged those two worlds. Okay, people look at this and they see these attacks from Hezbollah and they want to know, okay, is Lebanon the enemy of Israel? Why doesn't Lebanon stop Hezbollah? But as you just mentioned, what they don't understand, similar to what Hamas did in Palestine, Hezbollah has taken over Lebanon. It's controlled by a terror group. Do I have that wrong?
No, you have that completely right. Lebanon was at one point the most beautiful and prosperous country in the Middle East. And then the Palestinians came in. In the 1970s, they started tearing the country apart. And Arafat and the PLO were based out of there. Carlos the Jackal, it became the world capital of, kind of Islamic terrorism there. And then there was the big Beirut civil war. I mean, we sent in the Marines, Reagan did, in order to try to, calm things down over there. And of course, he pulled them out after the big Beirut bombing. Now, the Beirut bombing was of U.S. soldiers was done by Hezbollah, which is Iran's terror proxy that ended up swallowing whole basically the entire Lebanese government. So, it is no longer a country. It is just a terror group that, runs some of the functions of a country.
Dave, Israel's military prowess is well known by its lovers and its haters, but it's being attacked currently on two fronts, Hamas, Hezbollah. They're planning on going into Gaza, which I think I'm one of the only people who's very, very concerned about this whole thing. All I see is sniper nests and IED heaven there. And this is all funded by a nation that's not a joke. Iran is no joke economically. They can provide certainly plenty of weapons and intelligence here. Dave, I think a lot of people are acting like Israel's victory is a foregone conclusion, as it always has been. Man, I'm concerned.
I share your concern. It's funny, people were comparing this last horrific barbaric attack to the Yom Kippur War, because it came 50 years since the Yom Kippur War in 1973, when Egypt and other Arab nations attacked Israel in a surprise attack on the Jews' most holiest day, when everyone is fasting and in the synagogue. So things were really touch and go, and it's been 50 years since obviously the Israelis were able to win in 73, largely thanks to Richard Nixon and the United States sending weapons that Israel badly needed sort of at the 11th hour. And since then, since 73, we've had this image, as you say, that Israel is completely unbeatable, and there have been good reasons to see that. There have been good reasons to believe that. But I really don't think, supporters of Israel in the United States and around the world, I don't really think we should take things for granted. Nobody is happy with the idea of Israel facing a two-front war in the north and also in the south in Gaza. And then increasingly you have, kind of the northern war plus, which is you already have Assad and Iran's Shia militias gathered in Syria at the border of the Golan Heights on Israel's northeast border. Supposedly they're ready to go. So Iran is sending all of its proxy armies there. Now, it remains to be seen. I've always thought that Hezbollah, unfortunately, would join the battle at one point or another. Sort of the idea was when Israel would kind of find itself bogged down in Gaza in a land war there, in a ground invasion, that's when the North would kick off. That's when Hezbollah would choose, or Iran would tell Hezbollah to say, okay, it's go time. Whether or not that's going to happen, it remains to be seen. I have a hard time believing at the end of the day, even despite the how tightly Lebanon, how tightly Hezbollah controls Lebanon, that the Lebanese government is fine with becoming suicide bombers along with Gaza. I mean, this whole story is the story of, in Gaza, it's the story of, a bunch of Palestinians and Hamas deciding, hey, we're going to be the suicide bombers. We're going to sacrifice ourselves as a nation as suicide bombers for Iran. And it seems like they're good with that. And I just hope that other nations will not be good at that, will not be good with that as well.
Yeah, let's pray sanity prevails. Dave, my brother, I love you. Come back soon.
Absolutely. Can't wait.
Senator Rand Paul wrote a book about Fauci and the evils of this government during COVID. It's worth hearing from the senator next, I'll tell you that much. We're going to talk to Senator Rand Paul in a moment. Let me talk to you real quick about something. We all have to live in this world, do we not? Part of living in this world, even under an evil regime like we are now, is we have to buy things. You have to buy things. I have to buy things. That's part of life. So we have credit cards. Hopefully you don't have too many, but you have a credit card. The worst part about that is we fund the worst people with our credit cards, because they're always these big bank credit cards. These big bank credit cards, you're sending your money to Planned Parenthood. You might as well just go down and drop off a check, or Black Lives Matter, or any one of these evil groups. Until now. Now we have an option. Now we have COIN. COIGN. What is COIN? Oh, accepted everywhere. Unlimited cash back rewards. Normal credit card, only it's a credit card company that shares your values and my values and promotes them. Are you tired of giving to Black Lives Matter and you'd rather give to a conservative cause? Coin.com/Jesse. Go get a credit card that doesn't hate your freaking guts. Coin.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Shutting down the government, all I have ever done, and go back and look at everything I've ever done, was to recommend common sense, good CDC recommended public health policies that have saved millions of lives. If you want to investigate for me for that, go ahead.
Common sense. Is that how you describe the COVID response in this country? With all these little commie tyrants telling you what to wear, whether you can go to work or not? Common sense. Joining me now, one of like five good senators we have in the whole country, the great Rand Paul, senator from the state of Kentucky and author of the book you should read about all this crap that these guys pulled, Deception, it's called. Man, is that appropriate. Senator, Dr. Fauci says he didn't do anything wrong. Man, what a public servant. I'm in awe of him.
Well, it sort of depends on whether you're reading his private or his public comments, because they're sort of diametrically opposed. You know, if you think masks are good and you're one of his colleagues, he'll tell you they don't work, frankly. But then if you're in the public, he'll tell you to wear two or three of them. And if it has the Washington Nationals on it or Black Lives Matter on it, it's going to work even better. And the thing is that I think there's probably never been a more arrogant public servant. I mean, when he's been attacked, he responds to it by saying that he is science. To attack the great Anthony Fauci is to attack science. I know of no one with that degree of arrogance, and I've been in the scientific world. I was in medicine for 20 years. I just know of no one with that degree of arrogance. But it's worse than that. Well, what it turns out that we found in the book is that it's not just arrogance, but it's actually malfeasance. It's this idea that he could fund this lab in Wuhan, fund this dangerous research. The research leaves the lab, becomes this lab leak, becomes this pandemic, and then he's going to cover his trail. And the emails in private are just amazing. It is extraordinary to see him summarize a conversation from February 1st, 2020, and say that we are worried because the virus looks to have been manipulated in a lab, and we also worried because we know they're doing gain-of-function research in that lab. Fast forward a year later, I confront him under oath in committee and ask him, did you approve the funding for gain-of-function research in that lab? Research that could have, or in low likelihood, became the pandemic. And he looks at me and says, unequivocally, we have never funded gain-of-function research in a lab. Privately, he says the opposite. So to me, it's enough for a referral for a felony conviction. I've referred him. I've summarized his dishonesty under oath to the committee. I've referred him to Merrick Garland, but I know you won't be surprised, but Merrick Garland has ignored the referral. And this leads, you know, many people in our public to think there's two sets of justice. You know, there's one set of justice if you're a conservative or a Republican, and another if you lie to Congress, if you just happen to be a liberal Democrat.
Yeah, no justice at all if you're on their side. Senator, I know this is probably a chicken or the egg question that I shouldn't even ask, but I am fascinated. You're in government with all these scummy people like Fauci now. I know you don't like it, but you are. Where does the arrogance come from? Are they arrogant first, and then they get into these government positions? Or do they get into these bureaucrat positions and somehow think they're kings? Because that's how they operate, as if they're royalty, and we're all just these idiot peasants who must be told what we're allowed to do.
Some of it's longevity. I mean, he was in government and in charge for so long, you know, 4 decades. And so I think longevity breeds some of the arrogance. I think that if you go back to his statements, even all the way back to 2012, the arrogance is just beyond belief. He says in 2012 that even if a pandemic occurred, if they create a virus in the lab that's dangerous and infects the scientists and it gets out and causes a pandemic, that the knowledge would be worthwhile. But if you actually talk to many other scientists, many of them, you know, who are editors of medical journals, editors of scientific journals, longstanding tenured professors around the country, MIT, Rutgers, Stanford, they will tell you they don't think the knowledge is worthwhile. They will tell you that this research is essentially equivalent to creating a nuclear weapon. It's sort of a stealthy nuclear weapon because it can kill millions of people, but gradually over time, and you can hide your tracks of where it came from. But in this case, there's so much evidence that it came out of the lab in Wuhan, and really no evidence out there that it came from animals. Historically, we have had viruses come from animals. There was a SARS-1 in 2003, 2004 that came from animals, but they quickly found an intermediate animal that hosted the virus, civets, a type of a cat. They tested these cats and they all had the SARS virus. This time, they tested 80,000 animals in China, and they found no animal that had this. And so really, the logical conclusion leads us to the fact that this came from the lab that Anthony Fauci funded for decades over there. But it's worse than that. He funded them while evading the safety committee. They had set up a safety committee in 2017 that said all dangerous research has to go before the safety committee. Well, this research never went before the safety committee because Anthony Fauci exempted them. So really, there's a lot of blame that rests on his shoulders. And I think ultimately, that's why you've seen the great deal of dissembling, the great deal of dishonesty that comes from Anthony Fauci.
Yeah, there's certainly plenty of that. All right, shifting gears here. Obviously, everybody is watching world affairs at the moment, and anyone who knows anything about history is a bit apprehensive right now, Senator, about everything going on, several different conflicts, several different fronts, and it looks like several conflicts to come. And the United States of America, Americans don't like this now. We don't have any money, Senator. We don't have any money. I have this thing that I tell everyone every time there is a headline of we're doing something, that we're borrowing money for that. We're borrowing money for the carrier groups. We're borrowing money for the border. We're borrowing money for everything. We don't have any money left. And Americans can't accept that we are going to have a different role going forward in the world, aren't we?
Yeah, if you want to look at how much money comes in and how much money goes out, we have about enough tax revenue coming in to pay for Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and food stamps. Now, you could choose to pay for some other things, but basically the entitlements consumes all the revenue. So every bit of what we spend on our military, about $850 billion is borrowed. All $700 billion that's non-military discretionary, which is welfare programs, it's all borrowed. And we are in a bad place. So the people who say, why don't you want to send more money to Ukraine? My point is, well, we would have to borrow it from China to send it to Ukraine. And even though my sympathies are, you know, against the people who have aggressively invaded Ukraine, my first obligation is to my country and is to the national security of my country. So I think the debt is so enormous, the $33 trillion debt, that that's our number one threat. I don't think an external threat is what's going to take down America. I think what may take us down is we destroy our currency, destroy our economy, and then we have civil unrest. That's more likely to be our downfall than it is that we'll be invaded by an external enemy.
Senator, I'm glad you brought that up, because it floors me how inevitable this is. And I know that sounds dark, but it's not a Republican or Democrat thing or middle or anything like that. Look, the exponential growth of the debt and being able to even service it, it's black and white. It doesn't matter your opinion, my opinion, anyone's opinion on it. It's coming. And no one in that town you work in, with the exception of you and like four other people, seem to acknowledge the fact that this is coming. It is coming. We are going off the cliff, and no one wants to talk about it. Instead, they just meet to decide where to send more money we don't have.
And it's accelerating. In the last 3 months, we borrowed over $1 trillion in 3 months. This is over $300 billion a month. We have never, ever borrowed the money at this rate. And this is a real problem. And people say, well, we've done it for a long time and we've been okay. Well, one of the things we're facing now is basically everybody's losing their purchasing power at an accelerating rate. And people say, well, it's 7%, it's 9%. But if you're on fixed income, that can be quite significant. Retirees, people that are lower wage earners, get really hurt by inflation. But there's also a danger they don't talk about. And that's the precipitous loss of the currency. So there are things that people call a black swan event. If you look at the stock market, people say that a lot of the downturn of the last 100 years happened on 7 days. So 7 days had downturns enough that they wiped out enough wealth to be most of the losses in the stock market occurred in 7 days. Because people can act irrationally when they become fearful, there may come a day when people say, well, gosh, we've always used the dollar as a reserve currency. We've always thought it was more stable, but they keep borrowing so much money. And even Europe, as socialized as Europe is, Sweden balances their annual budget. Germany balances their annual budget. Half of the European Union actually balances their annual budget. And we're running $1 trillion, $1.5 trillion every year, and it's only getting worse. Our interest payments are building up. So there is a point at which there is a point of no return, and a point at which maybe people give up and there's a catastrophic run on the dollar. That will be the calamity that leads to chaos if that happens. I can't tell you that's going to happen or when it happens, but I can tell you that I'm worried about it. And so the only way to fix these things is to begin now. So anytime people ask me for money for anything, I mean, it could be for Santa Claus's birthday. You know, you want to do something everybody's for, pay for it. Take it from someplace that's less likely that we don't need it. So, for example, if people right now want more money for Israel, I'll vote for that. If you take it from someplace, we shouldn't be spending it. So we have about $1 trillion still in an Afghan reconstruction fund that were given to the freaking Taliban. We're giving money to the government of Afghanistan that we, you know, 13 of our soldiers died on the way out. They were killed by the Taliban. And we still have money going over to the Afghan government. I would cut all that out. We still have money that we give to the Palestinian Authority. Why do we do that? We have foreign aid that we give to dictatorships around the world. We give $1 billion to Egypt that has a dictatorship, and you can be put in prison for dissent. You know, they have indefinite detention in Egypt. You don't get any trial, and yet we give them billions of dollars. So if people think something is a more justified cause, and, you know, I'm horrified by the violence that happens in Israel, I'll vote for more money if it's necessary, but it's got to come from someplace else where it's less necessary. I said this in front of a Democrat chairman recently, and he responded by saying, we shouldn't have to choose. And it's like, that's what being a legislator is supposed to be about, is making choices. What is most important? Mayors have to do it. County judge executives have to do it. Governors have to do it because they have a limited amount of money. Everybody chooses every year and sets your priorities on where you're going to spend your money. And yet in Washington, it's the only place on the planet no priorities are set. If it's a good cause, we'll give you money.
Golly. Senator, the book is Deception by Rand Paul. Go find out what your taxpayer money funded. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jesse.
All right. Riley Gaines going at it with a major university. What's that all about? What'd she do? Let's talk to her about that in a minute. Before we talk to her about that, let's discuss something that we just kind of touched on a little bit. Financial problems, banking, and things like that. part of our problem, your problem, my problem is the banks in this country hate us. You see it all the time. You wake up in the morning, you look through the news, and you see another person got canceled, another person got his account taken away, another person got this done, another person got that. You see it all the time. Old Glory Bank is finally a solution. We've been dying for a bank that shares our values. You know what bank's never going to cancel your account for free speech, buying a gun, anything like that? Old Glory Bank, started by people like John Rich, Larry Elder, people who share your values. This is where we should bank. Doesn't matter where you are. They have an app. They have everything you need. Old Glory Bank. You go to oldglorybank.com and sign up. This is our bank. We finally have one. Oldglorybank.com. We'll be back.
I have no doubt that we will once again encounter speakers that many will consider controversial, either because their views are not widely held or because a speaker espouses ideas that are actively hateful. I share the concern of those who believe the messages spread by some individuals are not only offensive, but deeply hurtful. And again, I stand in unity with those who condemn such speakers and their rhetoric. You may ask, if so many individuals, including the president of the university, find these speakers so objectionable, why can't we just ban them from our campuses? First, as a public university, Penn State University is bound by the First Amendment. And if you wish to exercise your free speech rights by protesting a speaker, we support you in this action, since rejecting hate-filled speech is the responsibility of everyone.
Joining me now, canceled Riley Gaines. She is, of course, an advisor to the Independent Women's Voice and the director of the Riley Gaines Center. I want a center. This should be a Jesse Kelly Center. Riley, what happened at Penn State? I went to Ohio, or I didn't win. I went. I love Ohio State, so screw Penn State anyway, but what'd they do?
Well, I went there. Oh, well, actually, I'll take you back. Back in August, we decided to go to Penn State. Turning Point USA students tried to secure a room. The university refused to meet with them, causing them to miss the deadline to secure a room. So then reached out to a Hyatt to have the event there. The Hyatt secured the room. After they figured out who would be speaking, they decided to cancel the room. So went back to the university to get a room. Again, the event was confirmed. We got a room. But then they came back again after finding out who was speaking, and they canceled the room again. So we went and we had a free speech rally on the Hub lawn, which there was, of course, a lot of supporters there. But as you can see in these videos here, there was a lot of crazies there as well.
Riley, what is the crazy to supporter ratio on these college campuses? From the outside looking in, they just look like a bunch of commie nutballs on campus. But you are obviously much more recently off of a college campus than me. How bad is it?
Well, I will say that the loud minority is real. They're shameless. They're perverse, I think, is a better word to use. And like I said, they're really loud, but the silent majority still exists. And I think even among Gen Z, majority of people acknowledge that this is crazy. They're just terrified to say it publicly. They're terrified to even, they were scared to even go to the event yesterday because they don't want their face to be seen supporting what I'm saying, which let me reiterate what I was saying, what I was there yesterday to speak about. It's that men are men and women are women and you can't change your sex. And people are terrified to say that, which I think says more about the administration and kind of the external pressure put on these students to feel as if they should apologize for feeling that way and as if they should feel like they're the crazy ones, again, for thinking you can't change your sex.
Pressure coming from where, Riley? And I mean that specifically because it's the craziest thing in the world, saying that a grown man with a penis should not be changing in front of the women's swim team with a bunch of young girls getting naked is honestly the most basic thing in the world. Anyone who's not a nutball would say, yeah, that sounds, yes, correct. And yet, that is considered a hateful position. You've been called hateful. Everyone calls me hateful. Where's the pressure coming from to be a nutball?
In terms of college campuses, it's certainly coming from the top. presidents of the university. I mean, we saw, as you played the president of Penn State, and how she explained the First Amendment to college students as if it was a nap to kindergartners. I mean, it's utter nonsense. And then goes on to explain why, unfortunately, they have to abide by the First Amendment. This was sent by a professor yesterday. I have it pulled up on my phone right here. I'll read to you. Professor Debbie Brooks sent out this out to all of her students at Penn State. She said, our recognized student organization, Turning Point USA, at Penn State University is holding a free speech event scheduled for the Hub Lawn at 4 p.m. Our understanding is that they will start setting up at 4. The student group confirmed this morning that Riley Gaines is attending, and a quick wiki search indicates that Turning Point is a conservative organization that is active on many campuses, and Riley Gaines is a former athlete who is anti-trans. Dignity Day is planned for today as a university and community-wide celebration of dignity. This seems like a good way to counter the hateful messages espoused by Ms. Gaines while not providing more attention and exposure to such messages. I mean, it's coming from a professor. Again, for saying women deserve privacy, safety, and equal opportunities, I'm anti-trans, and I'm espousing a hateful message. And her students read this message, and again, it's that authority bullying mentality that we're seeing happen, not just in academia. We're seeing it in corporate America. We're seeing it in the media. We're seeing it in churches, even in the medical profession. It's happening all over, again, of simply bullying, trying to emotionally blackmail people into silence.
Ugly bit of business. Riley, keep doing what you're doing. You and the Riley Gaines Center. That's awesome again, by the way. Thanks for coming.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jesse.
All right. Adrian Norman always has something sharp to say. This whole illegal immigration thing, what's going on with it? Yeah, we have major domestic issues, as you just heard from Riley, as we're going to talk to Adrian. Before we get to Adrian, let's get to this. We have to take steps to protect ourselves, to where you probably say, well, yeah, Jesse, I carry a weapon. Good, I'm glad you do. Do you carry an attorney? No, I don't mean carry one around with you. I wouldn't burden you with that, but do you have an attorney on retainer in case, God forbid, something happens and you have to use that weapon? Oh, no, Jesse, I got the insurance. They said they'd cover me. Those insurance scams that say, oh, no, we'll cover you legally. You know they can drop you if they don't like the shoot you were in, right? Oh, sorry, we don't like that. Ah, you're on your own. Get an attorney on retainer 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This isn't for Richie Rich. This is for normal people. That's what attorneys on retainer is all about. For normal people, go to attorneysonretainer.us and use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $50 off your sign-up fee. That gives you and me, normal people, Joe Schmo, legal coverage. You will need a lawyer. You see what these prosecutors are like, judges like now. If the worst happens, even in your red area, you will need attorneys on retainer. Attorneysonretainer.us, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
The money was appropriated for the border wall. I tried to get them to reappropriate, to redirect that money. They didn't. They wouldn't. And in the meantime, there's nothing under the law other than they have to use the money for what it was appropriated. I can't stop that.
Do you believe the border wall works?
No.
Who are they? Isn't he in charge of the country?
No, Congress appropriates the funds.
Well, okay, so he can't get Congress to get that money and use it for something else?
What bothers me about this, though, and it's a big criticism of this administration and Democrats in general, is their messaging sucks.
I'm sorry, it murders me. I don't mean to laugh. Those are honestly, they're the dumbest people. And it's amazing to me that they drive a lot of our political conversation in this society. But let's talk to Adrian about that, about the border and what the right believes, what the left believes, what anyone believes. Joining me now, staff writer and a great one for Timcast News, my friend Adrian Norman. Okay, Adrian, Biden administration comes out after stalling the whole thing, says, hey, we're gonna build some wall. It doesn't work and it sucks, but I have to. And what is this? I'll tell you how I interpret it. I interpret it as the black community, the urban black community, is angry about illegal immigration, and the Democrat Party needs them to be motivated coming into an election year. And this reeks to me as a pat on the head, so they just shut up and go away. Am I interpreting that wrong?
I don't think you are, man. I mean, the big question that I have, and again, the question that she raised about the messaging had to do with the timing, right? Well, it had to do with the fact that this was appropriated funds by Congress from 2019. Next year is the 2024 election. So the question on my mind immediately was, why now? Why all of a sudden are they interested in at least feigning like they're interested in border security when this entire time we've seen an unmitigated disaster at our southern border? The only thing that's changed is that liberal cities are now being flooded with illegal migrants from cities like from states like Texas and Florida, and they're being overrun. And now they have to deal with this problem in their own backyard, which they never wanted to do, they never anticipated to do. The idea of being a sanctuary city was always just smoke and mirrors. It was just a sort of a talking point and a PR stunt to placate their voters. But now that they actually have to grapple with the reality of what it's like to have to provide for hundreds of thousands of people who aren't really supposed to be in this country in the first place, but you're statutorily obligated to provide for these people to the cost of New York City is projecting $12 billion over 3 years. And now the chickens are coming home to roost and they don't like what they're seeing.
$12 billion over 3 years. Adrian, if you believe that Democrats want the border open, and half the loser Republicans too, by the way, if you believe they want the border open, how can a nation, any nation, large, small, powerful, weak, survive that? No nation can survive importing mass quantities of poor people from any part of the planet, whether they're just looking for work or terrorists or who knows, doesn't matter who they are, no nation could survive that. We can't survive like this.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, even before this crisis, so look, since Biden's been in office, we've had 7.2 million illegal aliens flood into the United States, all right? 7.2 million in just 3 years. The last year, fiscal year alone, we saw more than under all 4 years of the Trump administration combined. So nobody can say this isn't a crisis. According to the Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR, the cost of illegal migration, and this is before the surge that came under Biden, Americans were spending $150 billion per year. I mean, we're up in arms over Ukraine, and we've only given Ukraine about $113 billion in aid, right? Illegal aliens cost this country $150 billion a year before Biden's migrant surge. So that number is going to go up to $160, $170, or $180 billion every single year. This is something that's unsustainable. We're going to have to print more money for this. We're going to see inflation increase. We can get into the crime issues. We can get into the other issues that we're seeing in getting some of these other cities right now that are having massive hysteria over what's happening. But something has to change. And the thing I think that frustrates me the most is that neither party, neither Republicans nor Democrats, seem to be serious about actually solving this problem.
Why aren't they serious, Adrian? Okay, let's set aside the commie scum for a second. Why aren't Republicans at least pretending to be serious about it? In all seriousness, we just talked about how a nation can't survive. We can't afford it. Even if you think we can survive, we can't afford it. It's dividing us because we don't share common values at all when you import other cultures that aren't similar to your culture. Why don't Republicans care?
Well, I've heard several theories. I mean, a large chunk of the Republican donor base actually wants the cheap labor, so they want to keep the border open. But also, I think it's sort of a general theme in politics. If you don't fix a problem, you can continue to fundraise off of it and campaign on it, right? It's like what we're seeing in California with the homeless crisis. I mean, the homeless czar out there gets something like $450,000 a year. Do you think they're actually going to fix the problem when there's that much of a paycheck associated with it? So the overall incentive structure in terms of our politics and what actually rewards you in this country is skewed. So there's no incentive to actually fix the problem and do the right thing for the American people.
State employee in charge of homeless people makes 450 G's a year. You can't make it up in this country, I'll tell you. All right, I don't want to overblow, because this would be tempting for me to do, any potential divisions with Democrats, but, well, here is Eric Adams.
We can't have a rule that one can come from anywhere on the globe and come to New York City and remain in New York City as long as they want, and taxpayers must pick up the cost.
Adrian, do we have tensions coming? I know there's already simmering tensions there between Adams and Biden. Biden visits New York, does not sit down with Eric Adams. That is the biggest sign in the world in politics. They are having issues with each other. Eric Adams can't print money. Joe Biden, because of his commie overlords, can't secure the border. Are we going to see divisions here?
I mean, mean, we're already seeing divisions, and I'm less concerned with division between the senior levels of the political class. I couldn't care less about whether Biden gets along with Eric Adams. My concern is the actual American people on the ground who are suffering, who have needs that need to be met, who are have economic issues, who are dealing with inflation, who are dealing with high gas prices, who now have to deal with the fact that, like in Chicago, you know, we're seeing city officials dole out millions and millions of dollars to, again, shelter people who circumvented our laws to come here and basically demand that we provide for them. Meanwhile, people need better jobs. People need better housing. People need to figure out how to get out from under this debt. And these communities need real help, and they're not getting that help because the government is picking and choosing favorites. They're playing favorites with other people rather than taking care of the people who elected them to represent them in their own communities. And it's sad to watch. So the division is already here. I can't imagine it's going to get any better because, look, at the end of the day, even if they were to enact border security tomorrow, we got 7.2 million people who are already here who aren't going to be leaving anytime soon. Those people, again, statutorily have to be provided for. So this is just it's a huge mess, bro. I don't know how we're going to get out of it.
Do you think normal people, not political people like you and me, do you think normal people on both sides are starting to wake up to the fact that the political class in this country really does despise them? They despise us all. Are people they catching on to that? And I know normal people who are busy and have lives and jobs and bills to pay, they don't get caught up in all this stuff like we do, but it sure seems like they should be catching on at this point in time.
It seems like more people are waking up, man. I mean, this issue is a big issue. You can see it in things like with the transing of the kids and people advocating for giving mastectomies to healthy 14-year-old girls, removing their breast tissue because they have a bad day and think they might be a boy. You know, we're chopping off the wee-wees of boys who have bad days and think they might be a girl when all they need to do is leave them alone and 90% of them will grow out of it. You know, these are insane policies, right? In California, they just passed a law where if you don't affirm your kid's gender, the state can come take your kid away from you. I mean, this is insanity. And yeah, I think the average person is starting to wake up to it and starting to say, hey, you know what? This is less and less about left and right and more about good versus evil. And I know we should typically try to stay away from that type of incendiary language, but I mean, there's no other way to put it at this point. The mask is coming off. These people have pushed too hard. I actually got to give you a plug because you addressed a lot of this in your most recent book, The Anti-Communist Manifesto. You get into not only how this happened, but you get into the details of why it happened and how this infiltration metastasized inside the United States. So shouts to you for actually having the balls to address this head on and in as much detail as you did. It's a great book. I recommend anybody else get it. I don't normally do plugs on other people's shows for other people's stuff, but you actually tackled this in a fantastic way. So
much appreciated, my brother. I did the best I could for an idiot Marine. Adrian, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on, Jay.
Be good. All right. Got light in the mood next. Let's talk about something real quick first. You know what gives me peace of mind sometimes? The wife makes fun of me. But you know what gives me peace of mind? Whenever I watch the news, I get kind of whipped up in a frenzy or a little bit stressed out. I know, we all do it. I'll go mess with my stuff. What kind of stuff? I'll go check out how much ammo I have. Hey, is my go bag ready? I'll take a look at my gold coins. Why? Is it because I love jewelry? Am I real greedy? No, I don't even have many. I have basic preparations. I've made basic preparations and it eases my stress level. Gold coins or silver coins, they're essential. Essential. You must have physical precious metals. I don't care which one you get, gold or silver. Get them in your physical possession. No, I'm not telling you to go buy $100,000. No, no, no. People don't have that kind of money. Look, if you do, fine, go do it. But normal people need to start acquiring things the government can't destroy the value of. Nothing lasts like precious metal. Call Oxford. Get a hold of Oxford Gold. They will handle it all for you. They'll get it in your retirement. They'll get it delivered to your home. You don't need a bank vault. You're not storing gold bars or anything like that. Just get a hold of Oxford. Go to jessekellygold.com. That's where you take care of everything. It's real quick and easy. Trust me on that. jessekellygold.com. We'll be back. All right. It is time to lighten the mood after all that. Now, before we lighten the mood, little girl at the zoo, before we do that, let's talk about something great. Let's talk about being allergy-free. It is so wonderful being allergy-free. And look, if you've never struggled with allergies, you won't fully appreciate it. And I understand that. But me, when I was 10, we moved from Ohio to Montana. And as soon as we got to Montana, my eyes started itching. And my nose started getting stuffy. And it's just years and years and years of struggling. Air filters, air purifiers, everything you can, the allergy medication. And then a couple years ago, buddy tells me about Eden Pure Thunderstorm. No more pills. It's an air purifier, but a different one. Little black box. It goes right in the outlet in the wall. It cleans your air. Viruses, mold, gone. Your allergies, my allergies, gone. I am allergy free. Keep one right where you sleep, in your living area, in your office. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Code Jesse gets you $200 off these wonderful little miracles. EdenPureDeals.com. Code Jesse. Now, poor little girl at the zoo didn't get to pet him.
You cannot pet that dog.
No, no, no.
You cannot pet that dog.
No.
You cannot pet that dog.
No, he's
you
sleeping.
You cannot pet that dog.
I'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.